Welcome back to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for the incomparable George Norrie. And what a show we have for you today. It has come through planning and through some synchronicity, so I think you're going to really enjoy this one. In the first hour, we've got Jesu Garcia, a bright, young Hollywood actor, and he has been in some pretty big films. Along came Polly, CSI, Predator 2, Nightmare on Elm Street. And it came to me that he was in a very different project from most of his other big Hollywood blockbusters. This one is about consciousness and about a shaman and about his own experiences that led him on a path of metaphysical awakening. It's called The Wayshower. And he's going to come on and talk to us about that. And then in the second hour, we're going to talk to Dr. Len Horowitz. This one is a brand new material. We're going to talk about a new Da Vinci code that he says he's discovered along with other researchers that goes to the heart of what makes the universe tick. It has to do with water, sound, and love, the three basic ingredients to get yourself one bustling cosmos. And we're going to explore that. And of course, it's Len, and I can't resist. I'm going to talk about the Illuminati, how it ties in. And of course, we're going to talk about conspiracies, because he's someone that likes to dig deeper down the rabbit hole than most people. So strap in. We're coming right back talking with Jesu Garcia. Welcome back to Coast AM. I just have to thank everyone who got in touch with me after the last few shows that I did. It is a real honor to be here. And I grew up with Coast. It changed my life. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that Coast really isn't a radio program. It is an institution of higher learning. Because where else on the airwaves are you going to hear all the kind of unbridled information that you get on a daily basis? So I'm going to pour everything I have into this. I'm going to try to get it all out to you. And let's start off with a little bit of synchronicity. I was at Sundance Film Festival a few weeks ago. There I am, minding my own business, and I was going to wrap it up. I was about to go home, and I got this phone call from a friend of mine, and he was driving up from L.A. It's crazy, I know, but there he was. So I was in the middle of Main Street. He picked me up, took me to this after-hours party at this house somewhere on the hill, and we all started hanging out with these filmmakers and everything, and there was a lady there who was a producer, and she started telling me about this conscious-oriented film with Eric Roberts, with Sally Kirkland, and others. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. And the more she told me about it, the more I knew that this was something that more people needed to know about, because when it comes to conscious media and filmmaking, I think it deserves an extra push. So we're going to bring on the star and the director, Jesu Garcia, who has been in many big feature films. I mentioned some of them before. Traffic, We Were Soldiers, Babylon 5, Along Came Polly, Nightmare on Elm Street, and much, much more. And this is a passion piece of his. So in other words, he did this on his own dime. He took everything he had, put it into this film, and it's about a remarkable spiritual journey that he went through, finding a guru and the metamorphosis in his life. And I'm just about as interested as you are to hear this. Let's bring on Jesu. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Rob. I, too, am a fan of Coast to Coast. It's an institution, and it saved my life in many sleepless nights, actually, you know.
Yeah. Well, you've been in Hollywood for quite a while, and you've had some great success. When did you start
and
acting?
Some bombs.
it goes with the program.
Oh, yeah.
When did you start acting?
I started by luck in 1983 or 84. 82 was Fame, the TV show, and I thought I was professionally. I thought I was going to be James Dean, and I didn't work for about 2 years, and I was going to give it up, and I walked into Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street audition. And he saved my career. And from then on, Johnny Depp gave me the script to my next movie. And that would be Gotcha. And then, you know, I was this young, kind of like these young cats out now, just working. And back then, the Reagan years, which were good for me, maybe not for other people. People were risking, and they were entrepreneurs back then. And people were making movies without you having to be a star, which was great.
Yeah.
Nowadays, a movie, you know, when you say my own money, it was my friend's money, but yeah, my own money and about two other people. And that's how you get it done. But back in the day, you know, people would fund you, and you didn't have to be Brad Pitt or something like that.
Yeah, they were a lot more liberal back then. Well, this is a pretty interesting story insofar. It talks about a guru, and it talks about a very dark part of your life. Take us to where the story picks up and how you became to be searching for a guru.
Well, in the story, just to give you a little backstory, as an actor, I'm always playing Che Guevara, a salsa dancer, somebody that I have aspects of myself, but I'm not. And I wanted to just be me and bring in the spiritual qualities as, I'm trying to remember the guy who did Twilight Zone.
Oh, Rod Sterling.
Okay, Rod Sterling is my hero. Rod Sterling, I didn't understand why I used to watch those Twilight Zone marathons, but I was so into that because he was bending my consciousness. And later I go to the Bodhi Tree Hotel, a bookstore, and I see that he followed a guru. He had his own guru. So everybody has a teacher, and everybody has their Obi-Wan Kenobi, I would call it, or their Yoda. And so John Roger was my Yoda, is my Yoda. And then where the story takes place is, obviously, I put in some personal things in 2004 after I finished Spiritual Warriors. We finished Spiritual Warriors. John Roger fell and almost down some steps. It was dark, and he almost killed himself and almost lost an eye. And it was, you know, it's like your best friend or your father getting hurt. Aside from him being my teacher, my way shower, he's my friend. And so it's like a good friend getting hurt. Anyway, jump to right now. I've heard so many great stories of him growing up, his father, a coal miner in Utah, Helper Price, and I wanted to write our next script. So we wrote together and we directed it together. And you know, people said, well, how could he have directed? You know, he's a guru or a teacher. A lot of the internal messages I was getting on making my decisions were coming from counseling with him inside.
Well, tell people who John Rogers is. Give us the thumbnail.
Thumbnail John Roger is a beautiful man, all about loving, educator, author, number one New York Times bestseller in the world. If you want the physical materiality, you know, he's number one New York Times bestseller, wrote 50, 60 books. But the man is one that he judges no one. You know, he's totally accepting of everyone, and he wants everyone to do well. And he changed my life. You know, I don't want to segue into Egypt, but in 1988, he took me to Egypt with 150 people. And that began my journey spiritually into Hermann Hesse wrote a great book called Journey to the East. And I read it on the Nile in 1988. It changed my life. And I didn't know. I was just this kid that wanted to be famous, and I couldn't figure out. I kept going the other way of, you know, I kept getting rejected, but I would work. And then, thank God, it didn't happen because I really wanted to, kind of like what Clint Eastwood's doing right now, especially with the Hereafter. I don't know if you saw that movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing what he's done. And, you know, Christopher Nolan, it's a different consciousness coming in now. These, you know, Darren, he did the Black Swan. All these movies are coming out that are different.
They're pushing the envelope a little bit
about your consciousness, mm-hmm. whether it be darker or lighter and not preachy. Anyway, I got lost a little bit, but John Roger is basically just a good man. I became friends with him. Mm-hmm. A lot of people learn under him, and he went to Egypt and Israel about 12 times. 10 of those times he took about 150, sometimes 300 people to do a pilgrimage of peace, spreading peace around the world. So it was very amazing to see Egypt change like that.
So what really compelled you to take on a film like this?
I wanted to, from the pre-production to the end, it was 6 months. I think we broke a record in filmmaking. To make a film like this was to honor John Roger, and I wanted to direct with him.
And there's two storylines. There's one of your own and sort of the backstory of John Rogers himself.
Yeah, the A story is me driving up to reconnect with what I felt I've lost, the guilt. You know, if you will, I'm Fredo in The Godfather. Oh, my God.
Well, man. Tell me about this time. This was sort of a dark time. What was going on back then?
Between 2004 till about now, the movie was very healing for me. It was a dark time. I mean, it was like you feel guilty. You feel, no matter, you know, I can have 100 friends come up to me and say, hey, man, it wasn't your fault. He fell. You know, it was an accident.
Oh, you were feeling the guilt over his accident.
I was feeling guilty over his accident.
Oh, okay.
Feeling guilty that I was responsible. I take on a lot of responsibility, period, to myself.
You thought to yourself, if I've only done more or maybe checked up on him?
And instead of making I didn't want to make a super big deal about it, but I injected that in the script of the Way Show, whereas that's what's torturing him. And when anything traumatically happens to people, their selves, the high self, the conscious self, and the basic self, they disperse, they split, they're in chaos. And so in the movie, I personify the selves. Peter Stormare, I'll give it up a little bit, but Peter Stormare plays doubt. And I introduce to you when doubt first comes into my consciousness as a child.
That's your demon.
That's your demon. When is the demon of the shame or whatever it is first implanted in the child? Because children come out innocent. And then in a traumatic moment, their selves are broken. And you can see it in The Black Swan. Herself is so extended that it sabotages her, you know.
So it's these whispers of doubt that finally you overcome, I guess, through the
help. I overcome in the movie, and while I'm overcoming it, you see a lot of, we go back into the 30s and 40s and 50s, and John Rogers, a little boy with his father, a coal miner, who teaches him the simple ways of life.
Hmm. Now, John Rogers got a pretty interesting backstory. He's from a little town in Utah.
He was born in Rains, Utah. And his brother's still there, and his brother, Delisle, was in a coal mining accident. We put that in the movie, and how a brother helps another brother out.
A lot of these Rogers are falling down steps, it seems.
Uh-huh.
There's a very noble tradition in America of being a coal miner. It's not a glamorous job.
Right.
It's a dangerous job, but it's a necessary one, right? Especially back then.
And right now, every time you plug in, I got a massive education from his nephew is the senator, state senator David Hinkins, who's also a producer.
Oh.
But I got a massive education that every time you plug in your computers and you charge your little iPod and your little iPad or whatever you want to call it, there's coal burning. There's coal burning and causing steam, and that is your power plant for Los Angeles. And it sits right there in Orange, I think it's Huntington or Orangeville, Utah. I could see it. When I out of my hotel room, which was this, it's very all country up there. It's about 7,000 elevation.
Mm.
But, you know, we have to be easy on the coal miners, not to shut them down and get all crazy. I know there's accidents and things that happen, but that's really the foreman and how careful they need to be. But if it wasn't for coal, there's a lot of debate.
Country runs on coal. Yeah.
There's about a lot. In the movie, I say out of coal comes everything because ore, you know, a steel, you know, they used to coke them in the coke ovens for World War II. And, you know, I mean, it's loaded. Coal has everything in it.
Well, give us a little bit of the background of John Rogers. Here he is coming from a very small town. How does he then go on to reach the heights of this amazing, prolific author?
Well, what I love about Utah and where J.R. grew up, John Roger, I call him J.R., is I'm really just following the stories he's told me, is his father and him used to go hunting.
Okay.
And in the hunting, that's what you do in Utah. You hunt for a living. In those days, that was during the Depression. You got your deer, you packed it in, you know, and drop it in ice, and that was the food for a while. But basically, going out into the forest and being by yourself would pretty much put you together with God in terms of your inner God. And that's what we put in the movie, is God in our movie is not some old guy with a beard on the top of the mountain. He's you in your voice, just speaking a different grammar in a different way, you know? It isn't like, let's go have a lollipop. It's the one that says, don't do that. But it's your voice.
So without all the trappings of society and culture, if you go out to these secluded places, you can really tap into some fundamental and profound wisdom.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. When I shot in Hiawatha, which is not far from Rains, we had to shoot up there in the mountains. There's nobody there. It's like, basically, it's you and your thoughts.
Okay, so John was out hunting, and he had some insight from being in these rural settings. So how did it go from there?
Well, I have him that he just has a lot of conversations with God, and as we all can have and do. And, you know, he was asked to do, in real life and in the movie, he was asked to do a job to step it up a little bit and go out and teach. And he turns it down. And by 1957...
Well, what does he turn it down for? Is it for a career, for family?
He doesn't want to turn it... He's turning it down because he doesn't want to be crucified. He doesn't want to be picked on. He doesn't understand why he's only the only one able to have this connection and no one else. He's able to see auras. He's able to see things like that. And, you know, it's kind of like very similar to Hereafter. As soon as that girl has that life after death, the French want to fire her. Do you remember that part?
Things open up after you have these experiences.
Yeah, things open up and you start to meet the people that know what you mean, and the people that don't understand you pick on you and basically, you know, ridicule you.
You know, that happens, I would dare say, for just about everybody in some degree.
Everything.
Where they have these little, you know, flickers of insight, where they have these abilities to really reach out and connect with things, and it scares them. When they first feel it going through them, a lot of times their first instinct is to shut it down because it doesn't fit into anything that they know, and they're, like you say, afraid to be made fun of.
It doesn't fit into their limited mind. It's like, you know, it's like listening to your show and Nuri's and Art Bell. It's the same thing. If you'd be cruising or going up Malibu on the coast listening, you can have an open mind and get involved in the conversation, or you can be in the car literally going, I don't believe this, you know, blah, 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 you know, this is ridiculous, or rather than go, oh, really? That's interesting. I'll read up about it. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Because J.R., when you asked about John Rogers, the number one thing that he always says is, check it out. Don't believe me. Check it out.
I like it. It's simple, to the point, easy to memorize. Okay, so let's go back to John Rogers. He turned down his intuition or his higher self that was pushing him to sort of get out on the larger stage. But what made him finally go ahead and do it?
He got in a car accident. The spirit asked him, you need to take on this mantle to help other people, especially your mother and your father. And boom, a car hits him when he says no. And he has a near-death experience where his body's floating above. It's operating room, typical story. And he's seeing his mother overhead. And when he comes back in the body, I did that for the movie Spiritual Warriors. Some of it is in The Way Shower. I like to repeat things in the movies, but basically he said to his mother, you know, I heard the entire conversation, and the mother said, this is verbatim, the mother says, who are you? Where's my son? And at that point, John Roger took on another consciousness, one that is a higher consciousness to help the basic, you know, run the body and bring this thing that had to be completed in the world.
It took a major disruption in his normal life.
Yeah, and by the way, this is very common in a lot of things I've seen. It's like, you know, people go, oh, what's he trying to be, Jesus Christ? No, there's only one Jesus Christ. But everybody can tap into this higher being and have a change of life and a change of consciousness.
This is what's so cool about it, because I haven't heard of John Rogers before I bumped into one of the producers there at Sundance.
He's always been a non-promoting kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be careful because I don't want to be, you know, we don't want to make him, I don't want to be saying anything that is so contrary to what he's about, which he's not about, like, I've got to run and be on Oprah, although I would do it in a minute, but he would not do that. I mean, it depends. He's been very, very ordinary, simple man, and that makes him extraordinary.
All right. Well, sometimes the most quiet people are the ones we should listen to the most.
Yeah, and he's met everybody. He's met presidents, kings, and queens, and even poor people. So
Good Lord.
He's always been, I mean, you know, because of him, I got to go to the White House, be with Clinton, meet him, meet Obama. And, you know, and he, even before me, he had met a couple other presidents. You know, he met Mother Teresa. And all of this is, he just wanted to be there for peace.
Absolutely extraordinary. Well, we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about this. And also, Jesu Garcia has an extraordinary story of a ghost. It's a chilling, haunting experience, and how it ties in to this remarkable film project. You're listening to Coast AM. Stay tuned. We are back on Coast to Coast AM, talking with Jesu Garcia about a pretty interesting tale that involves his own spiritual journey, which he has transmuted into a film starring himself, starring Eric Roberts, and many more. It is a pretty interesting tale, and as I say, it has turned me on to things I didn't know. For instance, this John Rogers, meeting heads of state and all these different dignitaries. I didn't know this guy was so prolific. So this is kind of a learning experience for me, and he's got some other interesting tales that talk about ghosts and things like that. So we're going to talk about this experience that he had of a metaphysical nature that I think is also very interesting. More information about him also is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're back talking with Jesu Garcia, director and star of The Wayshower, new metaphysical film. He's also been in many feature films. Along Came Polly, Traffic, Nightmare on Elm Street, Predator 2. This is a pretty interesting story, Jesu. I want to talk about this ghost experience that you had that ties into all of this. But first, I have to mention that before I even knew you were in this film, when I was talking to the producers, I said to myself, this is something that really interests me, and I know it's perfect for Coast. As it turns out, you and I are also in another project together.
Yeah. Dante's Inferno
With Boris Acosta.
Boris yeah. Acosta.
Yeah, I do some presenting about one of the levels of hell, and you are doing some voiceover?
I did the same thing of just a little chapter of when he goes through one of the levels of hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, voiceover. I think you were, voiceover and he in a little face. Weren't we in front of a green screen?
Yeah, I was on camera too. So funny. It's kind of a small world. I had to throw that in there. But, well, let's get to this because you mentioned this to me when we're off the air. Tell us about this extraordinary experience when you were a child and how it ties in.
Well, I remember, I don't know, maybe I was 7 or 8 or 9, something like that. I was in Florida. My mom had left my stepfather, and we were at my auntie's. And I always loved Florida. It was good memories. And I remember seeing, as I was doing my train tracks, in back of the sofa, I saw just a white male, you know, somewhat young, like kind of like an etheric feeling, wearing a three-piece suit. And then I had mentioned it to Annie, and Aunt said, oh, yeah, that's someone that died here. But no one could really, this is what they thought. And we all bought into that. But I remember clearly the face and everything. My mom later would tell me, because now she loves John Roger and everything. Now she said she remembers seeing it also. So cut to, as a teenager, I'm at Lee Taylor Young's house, and I get introduced to this teen sharing seminar, 1980-ish, and maybe a little bit before. And on the mantle of her house in Benedict Canyon, I see a picture of a man just like the ghost in a three-piece suit. And I just blew me away, and I just kept saying, who is that man? Who is that man? This is the man. But who's that man? And then she told me, this is blah, 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 blah. I had thrown it off my shoulders because I was a teenager, and I was going to go party for the next couple years in Miami, find out who my real father was. Then later I would meet John Roger in one of those self-help seminars called Insight Seminars. And that's when I went, oh, my God. It was like a triple, like one of those things where you go, oh, my God, that's the guy. And then you're going from your childhood to your teenagers, through your teen age, and then to now at 20, I think I was like 21 or 22 at that point.
It was John Rogers in the photograph.
It was John Rogers. And then when I saw him live, I said, that's the guy. But why can't he be my friend? I couldn't believe it. It's one of those things where you just know. I know everybody in the world has had this feeling where you know someone, but you don't know if they'll ever recognize you. And I recognized him. And then later I would have experiences that I was his son in other lifetimes.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if there's some past life connection.
For sure, and it's in the movie. And of course, we became friends. I mean, I live with him. I take care of him. We've been friends for 20-some-odd years.
Is he still alive?
Huh?
Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's still alive. He's doing good.
He gets out and active?
He gets out. He's 76. We travel the world. Last year we were in Morocco. We try to take him out on his birthday, and like hundreds of people come. We don't have enough spaces, but generally we take about 130. And in 2009, we went to Israel for his 75th birthday or something like that.
Does he still perform these guided meditations or these peace walks?
He does a little bit, but mostly it's all been recorded. He's done like over 60,000 pieces of seminars. And you can go to MSIA.org and see all that. On YouTube, lots of moments of peace, two-minute things that he's done over the years. And, you know, he's got tons of books from The Way Shower, Spiritual Warriors, and onward. The latest book is Living the Spiritual Principles of Health and Well-Being. But, you know, he's always out there. He's going to keep going until he drops. Hopefully, knock on wood, not for a long time.
Yeah.
But we're going to go to Ireland this year for his birthday.
Okay.
And so the thing is that we, you know, I also made this movie so that we can show the movie, have a book signing, and enjoy the fellowship that we all bring to the party. Everybody likes to be around him, and he's just like this walking light that attracts, you know, you just feel good hanging out with him.
Extraordinary. Well, the name of the film is called The Way Shower, and what does that mean? I've never heard that term before. Is this a new one?
The Way Shower is a term that they gave him in the 70s. He's the man that shows the way. You know, he's mm-hmm. like, he never really wanted to be known as a guru or the Christ consciousness is really, everyone has that consciousness, and everyone wants that consciousness. And I would say that we're all that, he's that, but primarily he wanted to be a guide, the way shower. A person that shows the way. I mean, I just read a quote where he said, hey, you know, let's say you had a goal and you want to climb Mount Everest. He's the guy to help you get there. This is an analogy.
He's a spiritual Sherpa.
yeah, exactly. And by the way, without them, forget about it. You can't make it.
Yeah.
But he's
certainly someone who you feel has this Christ consciousness. And that's very uncommon, let's face it.
You know what? He loves everybody, gays, yeah. Blacks, Jews, Gentiles. There's a lot of those people in our organization.
Unconditional love is what you're talking about.
Unconditional love. You know,
well, it, but it also
which
seems...
Which is very rare as a Christian. And, you know, he's a Christian, so am I.
Okay.
But very rare.
Well, it shouldn't be. Well, people complain, yeah. But, well, let me ask you this. He seems as though he's demonstrated this pattern of shunning the spotlight. You know, even by, you know, accepting this title, The Way Shower, I mean, it's a very subdued title, but it sounds like he has a very, very profound effect on people. And what do you think his life would have been like, or his popularity would have been like, if he didn't have this tendency to withdraw?
I don't know. You know, I think...
Would he be the, you know, could he be construed as the second coming?
He's always said that there is no second coming. It's already here. You know, it's the consciousness. And I didn't understand it until I saw it in Egypt, until I saw all those kids, everybody get together. Most of those people were under 30. It's the consciousness. It's not one dude saying parting the sea. It's the consciousness, the Christ consciousness, which means the anointing, this thing has gone out, and it's contagious.
Is he able to collect people's consciousness? Is he able to focus people and draw people in?
You know what? He's always said, "I'm non-inflictive. If you don't want, I can't. You know, if you don't invite me, I can't participate." So he's never been one that stands in the corner with the Bible beating you over the head, which is really, I think, a misinterpretation of what Christ or any other prophet would want. You know, even I would go as far as to say Muhammad you know, I'm sure he didn't say take the Quran and go, you know, beat people over the head with it. I think it's something that you feel as you know, as all these prophets who, like, as Muhammad respected Christ, I respect Muhammad and all the other prophets. That I think initially they were just so pure in what they were trying to transmit, and then it all got convoluted.
Well, he certainly sounds humble, which is a hallmark of a great being, and
yeah,
sounds somebody who's worthy of attention. I think that's why this film is really important. Now, tell me a little bit about the casting. You've got Sally Kirkland there. You've got Peter Stormare, who's, people might remember, he's one of the killers from that movie Fargo, that tall Swedish guy.
The blonde guy, yeah.
Right, which was creepy.
He's great.
And you say he plays doubt in your film. He's the one whispering in your ear, trying to pull you away from your path.
Yeah, in the movie I had to give a physical personification of an emotion or a thing. So Peter Stormare plays, by the way, he was in the Super Bowl. Did you see him as the Western guy singing Tiny Dancer?
Yeah.
Amazing. But he plays doubt, and Nina Bergman, this hot, you know, Danish rock star, she plays the physical arm of doubt, the one that beats you up. You know, in the movie at the end, he says in my ear, the tools of the devil are worry, fear, and doubt. And I needed to put that in because that is what destroys everyone.
Powerful.
Fear, worry, and doubt.
Eric Roberts is in there, too. Did he film this before or after he had his stint in Celebrity Rehab?
I never knew about the Celebrity Rehab till after, or that he was going to do it, but he did it before. And I don't understand why he went in there. He looked great to me.
But, right.
You know, it probably had to do with his steps on. I saw some of the segments, and I think he needed some healing with his steps on, and that was beautiful.
Well, what about the people who were taking part in this film? Did they talk about how this changed them? Because I know
everybody in Helper was changed. This movie was made really very little money. I mean, way below $1 million. And really, if it wasn't for the town of Helper.
Helper, Utah. Well, tell me about the strange things that went on out there.
Oh, very funny. Helper, Utah, I don't know the year, but Helper, Utah, it was a coal mining town, still is, but it had its heyday, and we're trying to revise it. There's a lot of people up there. Shout out to Helper, Utah. A lot of people. I would like it to be the next Sundance in the sense that it's like a ghost town. The buildings are really old. They have dungeons and basements that used to go out the back when people used to do
Prohibition?
Prohibition. Yeah. There was gambling. Everybody was a member of some kind of club that went down two more floors from the main street. It's just Main Street. It's just a little town that is probably a quarter mile long. Cross the street, you go about three blocks that way, three blocks this way, it's done. And all these brick buildings, these red brick buildings that have been there probably since the early 1900s, maybe late 1800s, one of them was a brothel. And I think it quit working as late as the 70s and 80s, I think. But bottom line is gambling stopped. There's only one bar there. And because it's a Mormon state, there was only certain cities and towns that you can really party, you know. And the coal miners, no matter how you look at it, they need to get away. They've been working in the tunnel. They need to, you know, get warm with a woman and do some playing and some gambling. Not all of them. I don't want to get some bad mail. But I'm saying I've been up there. After being working all day, you do want to let loose. But in this one area, this brothel, it was converted by my buddies up there that live up there now, and it's now an art studio for young artists to come over the summer and do art and paint.
So the whole crew was up there, the whole cast and crew.
I put the whole crew and cast, except for the non-spoiled, the spoiled ones. They wanted to stay at the Holiday Inn, but that was in Price, 6 miles away. I wanted to keep everybody centralized. So I put them all in this brothel slash converted studio, art studio. And it's typical, like upstairs, one of those cow town, and every room you can tell that the ladies would have these rooms, you know, all around, and it was squeaky wood, probably about three stories high. And the very end of the back, I was in the front, And you can hear the train station. You can hear the trains. And Helper was named after the train, the locomotive that would help the coal carts go over the hill or down the hill.
Right.
That's why it's called Helper.
Were there any ghosts of the cowboys? Or?
Exactly. Well, I never saw it, but I got the willies and the creeps. And I always felt, you know, I generally talk because I'm in the spiritual, you know, world. It's not like I've seen a demon or anything like that, or like the paranormal movies. Paranormal movies are quite scary, but I would say you do get the willies and you do feel like they're crowding you, you know, the spirits. And when I went to the far back, from then on, I stopped going to the bathroom. I would, if I had to go, I would pee in a bottle and then just see everybody in the morning. I just wasn't going to deal with it.
So you think it was an active place for roaming spirits?
No doubt.
Really?
That you can feel it in the back. And we would always light candles and pray and ask for maybe it to be released. Sometimes they get trapped there, and they're looking for the light and a way out.
I mean, especially a place that gambling. They were probably shooting each other over debts and cheating and things like that.
And they had said that some ladies had died there. Nothing stabbing or anything, but you know, it had. You know, it's probably over 100 years old. You know, somebody might have died in there, or somebody got shot, or who knows what. But for sure, I could feel this being, and I would talk to it. I would say, hey, you know, I would make fun of it. I would say, you know, you need to just give me some space. I need to pee. And it was always around the bathroom area, which probably was a converted bathroom. It probably was a room. And the art studio converted it into a... she converted it into a bathroom, but it probably was a room.
Yeah, these guys wouldn't let you go in peace. I mean, that's troublesome. I hope they were quiet during shooting anyway. They weren't dragging their trains or anything?
No, I never heard any of that.
Well, that's good. Well,
we generally walk around with the light around us, and you know, some of our cast members, you should talk to them. Some of our cast members say they were thrown off the bed at night.
You're kidding.
They were, because they stayed at another house. And one of these houses said it had activities, and you know, I was busy directing. I was like, you know, the ghosts. I have never ever been in a shoot where ghosts are disrupting the actors and the production.
Are you saying they were actually physically thrown off the bed with some considerable force?
Yeah, and so we had to take one of the actresses who plays, she plays Malin. I forgot her name. She's this terrible Rachel. Rachel Lara.
Okay.
She was
the one that was...
She was with another actress that was thrown off the bed.
Yeah.
She saw that.
Wow.
Rachel stayed at the house, and I moved the other actress that was freaking out with Sally Kirkland at another house, because we rented houses from folks that lived there.
Okay.
That would rent to us because there were no hotels other than 6 miles away, and I needed them close. So there was at first, a lot of people, Evan Hart was one of my actors that played John Roger as a young man. He was freaking out. And I just didn't know what to do, except I called John Roger and I said, can you please send light? Can you please, you know, help us? Because I've never, ever, I have SAG union.
Sure.
I thought the union would try to hurt you, or I thought that, you know, Teamsters would try to slow you down. But no, it was a couple ghosts.
Yeah, well, I hope your insurance covered it anyway, if they were injured from falling off the bed.
No, I think it freaked them out more than anything.
Well, okay, this, you know, a lot going on with this. I had a feeling as such. It's called The Way Shower. Where can people see it? When's it coming out?
You can go to thewayshower.com and just like it. It would go to your Facebook, and liking it really helps us. We are completely low budget.
Okay.
We just came back from Sundance, although we weren't accepted. We went up there to hustle. Kelly, who you met, and Zoe, they helped get us a screening up there, and we screened it up there.
Right.
So we're hoping other film festivals will start taking us.
Okay, so you're going to shop it around a little bit, get it out there.
Scandinavia's called us, and they want to buy some of the rights, and so things are buzzing. It's a really, really fantastic movie. It's edited in a Limey-esque kind of way.
And also, tell me about the sound.
The sound was done by Matrix, the people that did Matrix, that's Dane Davis at Dane Tracks. And so that, it was amazing to, it does feel like you're completely stimulated audibly.
I love it. I love everything about it. Jesu Garcia, thanks so much for coming on and telling us about this.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. It's awesome.
I really appreciate it. This is what we do here. We like to expose people to different things, new things, things they might not have heard on regular media. This is where we open the aperture of your mind little by little. Well, coming up next hour, we're going to bring on Dr. Len Horowitz. We're going to talk about this new Da Vinci Code that has to do with sound and water and frequency. And it's also going to get into some pretty wild subject matter. And I need your help. I need your phone calls because there's going to be a lot of ways to come at this next topic. So stay tuned. More Coast to Coast coming right up.